Welcome back to the Thermo Diet Podcast. I'm your host, Jayden Miller. And today I have on the podcast, Teresa Paella again. I really enjoyed this podcast. We talked about the perception that you have during the healing process and kind of some of the perspectives that you have whenever you're in the process of healing from the very beginning of the journey to kind of throughout all of it. So we get into some really interesting topics as far as like worrying about what other people think of you whenever you're doing certain things to heal the metabolic rate and to kind of take charge of your health, to how you should be thinking of yourself, and a lot more. So let's go ahead and dive into this one. Teresa, thank you for hopping back on here today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yes, ma'am. So we were chatting a little bit before we started recording, and we decided to talk a little bit about the worrying or kind of like the thought process behind what other people think about ourselves. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it takes me in a lot of different directions because harder now, but if I were to pick my brain up and place it on who I used to be, that was a huge part of my development. And I think of what contributed to me getting sick and having symptoms originally, because it was almost this chronic fear response of constantly judging myself and thinking other people were judging me and imagining what they were saying about me, and even taking in real judgment from family members, from acquaintances, from so-called friends, and changing the way I would speak to myself because of things they would say. And even just thinking back to my own personal healing journey, there were points where family members told me that I had manifested my illnesses, or that I had created them because I liked the attention, and that, you know, I liked the way my body looked. By the way, I was emaciated and about 79 pounds. And, you know, there were moments where they would say things like that, and my whole world felt like it shattered. And I felt like I was going to throw up because I couldn't understand and I couldn't process how someone could think so differently than what my reality felt like. And it was actually my husband who started to really bring up the idea of, well, what if you don't judge anyone? What if you really learn to not judge anyone? And in the process of releasing the need to judge, or, you know, even put people in categories or boxes, I learned to really not only not judge myself, but even step into the realm of, if I only congratulate and cheer myself on, knowing I'm doing my best, knowing my truth, really, you know, the whole inner dialogue started to change. And now I'm at the place where we were just kind of talking about before the call, before we started recording, where when other people judge me, it just rolls right over me. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't weigh me down. In fact, it almost makes me just smile or laugh, because I'm noticing that in the past, if I had ever judged someone, it was because of pain I was going through. Or say I judged someone for something they were doing. If I really backed up and looked at it, it was because maybe they were doing something or had something that I wanted that I believed I couldn't have. So kind of separating myself from that, realizing, okay, if my inner chatter and my inner dialogue is creating this pain and suffering and maybe this illusion, that comes back to me. Mm-hmm. So really stepping into this idea of, okay, we are in charge of our thoughts. We are in charge of our lives and how we show up for the world. What would happen? Who would we be if we released judging others, if we released the care of when other people judged us? So what's coming up as I describe this?
So you're saying the initial dismissal of your judgment for both yourself and others is what kind of allowed you to stop caring about the external gaze onto you?
Yeah. And I feel like I'm not sure if I can pinpoint it down to a moment, but I think it was in the last year or so, because there were still moments where someone would judge me or even say something to my face, and I would still feel that pain. Or even when I was still living in a very physically sick body, I would still get kind of nervous, even just, you know, showing my skin, because I would assume that other people would be judging me for looking so sick. And then, yeah, it just released. And now it feels like it only opened up space for kind or loving or compassionate thoughts. Even if I look back to some of the scenarios I put myself in, and, you know, the stories I was telling myself then versus what I can see about the situation now.
Mm. Yeah. So one of the things that I've noticed in my experience, I guess more recently, is that some of the things that I do that I tend to not worry about judgment of, and then like in the moment, and then maybe like reflect on it and kind of wonder about judgment back in the past, so to speak. Yeah. I've talked to people in those experiences, and they've actually committed me on the things that I've done. The things that I would thought that I should have hesitated or not done. I've actually gotten commended for those things by other people. So it's kind of interesting to see how different our perspective can be from the perspective of others as well. So a lot of the times I've noticed that my own guess of judgment of theirs is either the complete opposite or much more harsh than the actual reality is.
Yeah. What do you think led your brain or your thoughts to create such a, I don't want to use the word negative, but like a self-conscious perspective?
Yeah, I would say, so for instance, like, I guess jiu-jitsu is kind of the freshest thing that's on my mind. So if I talk about this a lot, I apologize.
This is great. I'm actually interested.
So for instance, whenever you're in the beginning stages, you're kind of like rolling around like a little baby. Like, you don't really know what you're doing. Your proprioception's not that good. So you're trying to figure out where your body parts are and how you're supposed to navigate them around another body and stuff like that. And so you walk in and you have to completely dismiss your ego and open yourself up to complete humility, because if you are not humble walking in there, then you're going to get smashed for one, because there's a whole host of people who can just demolish you whenever they feel like it, pretty much. And then the second is you're not going to learn if you don't have the humility to open yourself up to that experience. But also, it's extremely uncomfortable being the new guy in a community like that. And also in the beginning stages of something, it's uncomfortable and challenging to continue to try and progress towards that. And I think, like, knowing that you're not good at something and knowing that it's extremely challenging for you too, kind of opens yourself up to that inner critic. And so I think it kind of becomes a little bit more rampant.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, as you talk about this, I can relate, because I know we've mentioned or talked about in the past, my interest in mountain biking, and I'm just getting back into it now that my shoulder is healed, almost healed. And at first I noticed, again, kind of stepping in and removing that ego, completely choosing to be humble because I want to stay safe and I want to avoid any injury, and noticing there was the smallest voice of judging myself, because I bike differently now. I bike like a baby, like you said. Like, if there's a bump coming up, I am off my bike. I am walking it. And noticing, okay, there might be the essence of judgment, but how quickly I can step back now and say, wow, great job for choosing to, you know, to be humble, for choosing to honor your limits and to want to learn and be in the movement, the motion, whatever. in a new way. So I think it's, yeah, there's kind of like there's an awareness and a choice and a presence that you create when you maybe notice that the ego is there and we don't even really want to get rid of it, but we can see it for what it is and just kind of watch it and maybe even bounce our more authentic behavior off of it. Because I think oftentimes the ego has been demonized when really it kind of just wants attention. So if you talk to it, if you thank it, and then choose to act in ways that actually feel good and maybe benefit others, that feels better.
Absolutely, for sure. I think one thing that has helped me kind of remain observant of that is just the fact that if you observe your own thoughts, probably 90% of the thoughts that you have on a daily basis are most likely about yourself. Mm-hmm. And that is for everybody. So if you're worried about other people's judgment, most of the time they're thinking about themselves. They're not really thinking about you. Mm-hmm. And they probably don't care at the end of the day too. So for instance, if you accidentally bump somebody's shopping cart at the grocery store and you worry about the judgment that that person might be judging you for, whenever they go to sleep that night, they're not going to remember that you bumped them at the grocery store, you know?
Yeah. They're thinking about if they remembered their ground beef or, you know, what time they're meeting their friend for dinner. But, you know, it's a funny thing too, because rationally it's easy to think, okay, if I can't control how anyone thinks and whatever they're thinking, you know, it's going to be up to them. But there's, for a lot of people, I think there is still a weight or an emphasis that what they think matters. And someone asked me this yesterday and it opened up a big discussion, but they were wondering, how do you decide or get to the point where you don't care what other people think? And I know we were touching on this a little bit in terms of, it's almost like this level of self-trust, but almost this level of metabolic health that you feel so good and grounded in yourself. There's this confidence that what they think becomes just, you know, it's almost like another cloud passing by or a butterfly, or, you know, it's just another texture. It doesn't have to be a thing. And what you brought up about the fact that most of our thoughts are about ourselves, have you found any shifts or different modes of thinking throughout the day that allow you to maybe get out of that headspace?
So whenever I'm around other people, one of the things that I found has been beneficial is trying to find small things to help celebrate with that person. Especially whenever I'm around people who tend to have a loud inner critic, so to speak, I try to figure out how I can celebrate with this person, or figure out like what things that I can point out that they are doing well, and kind of help motivate them in a positive direction, I guess. And typically I don't expect anything in return, but they always tend to comment back and reciprocate that action as well. So that's kind of interesting.
And you just reminded me, as you said that, this idea of a really loud inner critic, something I've been working on recently is even celebrating the inner critic and using the tone of voice like, wow, Teresa, you are doing such a good job criticizing yourself right now. Look at you. You've mastered the art of being so rude to yourself. And in that moment, I've noticed if I can engage that kind of voice, it opens up a space for humor, which then opens up kind of that awareness of myself where I can then decide, okay, look at me, look at what I'm doing. Is this how I want to be using my precious thought energy? And I love taking that one step further and saying, okay, no, what can we celebrate about this person that I'm speaking with right now? What can we celebrate about even someone else's joy? And it kind of removes that chatter, because it really does feel like it's like a drain of energy, just being stuck in that loop of what we may have done wrong or how we're not meeting our own expectations, all these things that I think can build and, you know, burn through our fuel, our minerals, or whatever it is that it's keeping us going.
Definitely. I noticed that the more that I practice it too, the more prevalent and the smaller things that I tend to notice about people too. Mm-hmm. And it tends to happen in much more nonchalant kind of interactions with other people too. So for instance, if someone's checking me out at a gas station, like I might notice a cool shirt that they have on or like a sick tattoo that's kind of covered up on their arm or something like that. And I'll point it out and I'll tell them like, hey, I think that's really cool. Like, what inspired you to do that? And it not only helps me practice that, but it also kind of helps in those situations interrupt their pattern of interacting with people. Because most of the time it's like, if you're at a gas station and you're just getting checked out, you just want to pay, get your stuff, and get out of there. And it's a very simple interaction. Whenever you can kind of interrupt that and maybe spark a light in that person's day somehow.
Yeah. And now you've got me thinking too, just about how lack of connection or even just like really having that moment, even with a stranger, that it feels like it's becoming more rare. I know shutdowns and closures in the last year really changed things. And I think people, whether they realize it or not, even if they're introverted and prefer a lot of alone time, there's something about that moment of meeting and kind of seeing someone and shifting their attention like you're doing by bringing, you know, maybe even saying something that they didn't expect, catching them off guard, pulling them out of that. It's almost like taking them out of this sleepwalking phase. And I've been thinking a lot about this, how sleepwalking through life is one way to do it, where there's this idea where you kind of just put your head down, you make money, you do what needs to be done, you run your errands, you fold your laundry, you work out, or you bring intention and mindfulness and joy and enthusiasm to whatever it is that you're doing, even if it's something that feels really mundane and, you know, oh, got to clean the toilet. Heck yeah, I'm going to put on some music and, you know, bring my red light so I can get some red light therapy while I'm cleaning the toilet. There's more power in our moment-to-moment living than I think a lot of us remember. And it's so easy to fall back into those patterns. So like what you were doing with at the checkout, we have these opportunities to kind of like pull people out for a second. And then in that process, we aren't criticizing ourselves. We're in that moment of joy with them. And now I'm seeing it like a string of lights. If we just keep doing that throughout the day, throughout the week, what kind of an imprint that might leave on a space, on a, you know, on your week.
Definitely. Also, I want to apologize. I have the pool right outside of my apartment here, and there's some little kids out there playing. So if you hear a bunch of little kids screaming out there, I hope they're having fun.
Yeah, that's great though. Good for them. Summer is here.
Yes. But I've even noticed like on social media, for instance, like some of the people that I'll follow from way back in my past, like they'll post something that they are celebrating, and I will try and celebrate that even more. Like I'll swipe up and I'll comment and I'll be like, hell yeah, man. Like, this is awesome. I'm so happy for you. Yada, yada, yada. And sometimes like people will respond with just a thank you and like, you know, like a rock on kind of symbol or something like that. But then other times people are all like, they'll start going into detail about their entire journey with it. I'm like, whoa, I did not intend to get wrapped up in this, but this is amazing. Like, that's awesome that you were able to do this. So I think that we have opportunities to do it in almost every single part of our day and every interaction that we have. And I think coming into an interaction with an intention like that kind of helps you have a more metabolic perspective, so to speak, or a high metabolic perspective of this kind of happy and joyful state that you're trying to remain in. And one of the things that I continually tend to believe more and more is that the psychosomatic experience is very important, and it works in both directions. So your psychology is going to affect your physiology and vice versa. So if you can make an intentional effort to have positive psychology then you're more easily going to step into a state of an abundance physically as well.
Yeah. And I love that you touch on that, because I know in the pro-metabolic world, that can even start to feel small when we think about, okay, I got to get a certain amount of protein. I got to get my sunlight. I got to get my aspirin in, and then I got to get my coffee, but oh, wait, I've had too much fat today. It's maybe blocking my oxidative metabolism. I need to, you know, and then we forget that, okay, yes, maybe that's one aspect of health, but if we are so in ourselves, that suddenly becomes another stressor, versus maybe living metabolically, forgetting food and forgetting supplements for a second. What if that is the more profound way to influence your health? And I personally feel like it is, because I meet with and speak with people so often where they're doing everything right, but there are still some glitches up here, maybe some habits of thought that are really pulling them down. And like you mentioned, if we are choosing to live with a little bit more intention, choosing to spark that joy internally, we're living with lower stress hormones just naturally, you know, we have a more balanced rhythm within us. And I think once you start to feel that and notice, like getting those data points throughout the day, when you speak with someone at the grocery store, or just having those kind of unexpected moments that allow you to feel that joy, it just can feel so good. And especially on social media, I think there is space for sure to compare, because you're only seeing the highlights of people's lives, or even just the colors, and there's a lot coming out of there. But we can choose to interact with that differently, whether it's following people that bring inspiration into our lives, or like you were saying, what if we chose to celebrate someone else's joy and get so focused on that we forget that maybe we're having a hard day, because wow, look at them. They've just turned their life around and created X, Y, Z, and they're experiencing this and they're going there. And there's more room for joy than what's just in here. Mm-hmm. And for those of you listening, I was focusing or circling my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. What would you say are some resources that you've used throughout the years to kind of help pull yourself into kind of that higher state of awareness, so to speak?
Resources? That's a good question. I mean, I pull from all of the masters continually, but the practice is noticing my own chatter, my inner chatter, my inner dialogue. Really, really asking, is this what I want to keep repeating and practicing? Because you start to notice how thoughts feel physically, really. And then if we can practice shifting or even choosing to step into different states, or even befriending the so-called lower states and not even making them a problem, that has been really helpful. And I guess, you know, some people might put it into the realm of meditation, but it feels more like just kind of paying attention and slowing down enough to pay attention and then mobilizing in different directions. And I know both of us have talked about how helpful movement is for us, like really physically challenging or stimulating, or even just novel ways of using the body can be so helpful in just shifting out of that thinking and criticism and spiraling into, whoa, okay, what's this energy feel like, without even having to put language to it. And then I know we were chatting a little bit about just art and painting and getting out of the language bubble completely. But, you know, resources, that's a really good question. I think just the more I even pay attention to how I feel listening to certain people talk, whether it's an interview with Ray Pete or, you know, an interview with just someone doing something that I find interesting, noticing how my body and my mood and my outlook starts to shift based off of what they're saying and paying attention. If someone is starting to maybe bring me to a place, or if I get pulled to a place that kind of feels negative or spiraling in a direction that doesn't feel like it's going to be helpful for me or anyone around me, then kind of turning my boat. Mm-hmm. But what about you in terms of resources? I'll have to think more specifically on that.
So I'll start off with tactics and then I'll go into resources if that's all right.
Yeah.
So one of the tactics that has helped me, and I do it less and less often now just because I'm so busy, but stream of consciousness writing, whenever I can just sit down and kind of just write down the thoughts that are in my head and get them down on a piece of paper, kind of analyze them. And if I see some kind of negative pattern that is occurring, like asking myself why that's there, and then kind of seeing different or thinking about different ways that I could have viewed that specific perspective.
I'm really glad. Thank you for reminding me, because that's one of the biggest reasons why I use tapping. And it's kind of like the essence of what I do, even if I'm not using that tool specifically. And I guess, yeah, the resource would just be EFT, meridian tapping, but you can notice exactly what you said, when you might be doing something kind of unconscious or unhelpful or negative, and very deliberately shift to the point where you feel it rewire in the brain. You feel the shift, you feel the new pathway kind of click into gear. So it's kind of like stream of consciousness, but without writing. So didn't mean to interrupt, but thank you for reminding me. It's so obvious that I didn't even think of it.
Definitely. I would say another tactic that has kind of helped me, and this one's just kind of something that I just started doing on my own. And I haven't seen anybody else do it yet, but whenever I find myself seeing something in a perspective that I want to take note of that might not be the most positive perspective, or like a perspective that I could see in multiple ways, I'll pull out my phone and I'll record myself, either whether it's a Snapchat video that I have to save or just something on my phone where I can record my thoughts, and I'll start talking into my phone and I'll talk to my future self and I'll be like, Jayden, like, this is the way that you were thinking about this thing. Like, these are the different perspectives that you could have taken with it. You know, in the future, maybe these are just some of the things that you can think about and, you know, try and do. And then like the good thing about Snapchat is like, I can just type some text on there, kind of get like the main idea over the top of it. And then whenever I'm scrolling back through there, I can kind of see like the different thoughts that are on there. So that's another really beneficial one. I would say that breath work and meditation have been really good. I'm a big fan of meditation. I know a lot of people in the metabolic community think that it can be dangerous as far as promoting things like psychosis and stuff like that. I tend to be on the route where it's like the people that that might happen to might have already had some kind of predisposition for some kind of psychosis. Or they were doing it to such a great extent that it could have, you know, just caused something to trigger. Like they might've been meditating for 6 hours for their very first time and it just completely broke them or something like that. I can see that happening for sure.
And people with significant trauma too, sitting down and kind of being in the body can re-trigger that event. So it might be safer to do something like a walking meditation, or like what you were saying, a breath meditation, where you've got the focus on an anchor that isn't going to be re-traumatizing.
Absolutely. I would also say that, so along with art, which is something that I try to do frequently, things like riding a motorcycle, doing jujitsu, going to work out, you know, going on a hike. Whenever you are doing something with your body and doing something that forces you into the present moment, you're not going to be in a depressed state because you don't have time in that moment to be in a depressed state. If you do, for instance, if you're on a motorcycle and you lose your attention for a second, there's no turning back. There's going to be something that's bad that's going to happen, and it's not going to, you're not going to be able to turn around on that one. So doing things that kind of force you into that present moment. Skiing is another good one. That's something that we have right here in Colorado, which is great. Doing these things that force you to be present and allow you to turn off that analytical and logical part of the brain and allow you to kind of mesh the psychological part of the being with the physical part of the being are very beneficial tactics as well. It's something that I've noticed that is great.
Yeah. You notice a spillover effect too, like after going on a motorcycle ride or like after jujitsu, where you've been in that headspace for a certain amount of time and it's almost like you've imprinted it. So maybe you go home for dinner and you kind of still feel like you're in that flow-like state.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or I would say that prior to going in there, if I was in a certain mind frame and then afterwards coming out, I'm in a completely different mindset. So if I went in just kind of stressed and tense, I typically come out. First of all, I'm exhausted if it's jujitsu. But it's also, I think it has a lot to do with the endorphin release and stuff like that. But it's kind of, I'm in a much more relaxed state for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I've recently gotten more interested in weightlifting again. And I've been practicing this idea of dropping my thinking into the muscle, which I feel like is a kind of older bodybuilding technique, but like really imagining myself in the muscle I'm working on. And it feels like a meditation. And I noticed that it completely cuts down the critical analytical part of me. And it's just like pure awareness, pure focus. And the spillover effect is so peaceful for me. I head home and I just feel like I'm kind of like floating and peaceful and more appreciative of what I notice on my walk home.
Absolutely. For sure. I would say one thing that I have begun to gain more respect for is, children. Like whenever I'm around, like, you know, family members with kids and stuff like that, I tend to talk to the kids a lot more than I'll talk to the adults, just because they have such a fresh perspective on the world that it is enlightening to talk to them almost, because they haven't been jaded with experience yet. So they kind of come into everything with a very humble and open mind.
Yeah. That reminds me too, again, just thinking about a lot of the older folks in my life. I shouldn't say a lot of them, but some of them have their habits and their ways of seeing and thinking and just interacting with the world that actually provide a really good contrast that remind me to step back into more of that childlike wonder and awe, where we're not so conditioned to be a certain way. And there's that famous quote of like, how would you act if you didn't know your age? And I feel like a lot of us would be having a lot more fun, you know, just even the way we move our bodies and the way we interact with the natural world, I think would be more creative and in that state of wonder, which coming back to releasing judgment, if we are in that state of being so captivated by something, there's no room for judgment. There's no time to care about what other people think of us. And it's almost like the language isn't even there for that.
Absolutely. For sure. Yeah, there's kind of a bunch of different things that pop into my mind going into that. But before I forget, as far as some resources go, the FitMind app is pretty good as far as like a guided meditation app. They actually have like lessons and podcasts and stuff in there that teach you about different realms of philosophies and stuff like that, that are related to meditation, whether it's Buddhism, Taoism, Stoicism, what have you. It has lessons for all of those. They have really great customer service too. One time I was having trouble with like the payment method, like I had paid, but it hadn't given me the premium version. So they just gave me a lifetime free membership to the app. So highly recommend that company. Letting Go by David Hawkins is really good. That book was definitely kind of an eye opener for me, I guess. Let's see. I also really like the Kybalion. The Kybalion has so many different principles that are, it's more of like a principle-based application to the universe and the world that we live in, and what's beyond ourselves, but it's extremely interesting. And I would say that taking that energetic perspective has been beneficial in it as well.
Did you say the Kybalion?
Kybalion, K-Y-B-A-L-I-O-N. It's it goes over the seven hermetic principles.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of it. Is it an older text? What?
Yes. So it was written by the three initiates, but it's based on like the laws of hermeticism. And it's basically it goes over, or it came from the hermetic cult. So they worshiped the god of Hermes.
Okay.
And they basically just, this, it was one of the religions that preceded most of the current religions that we have, or that are kind of mainstream now, and was what a lot of them were kind of fundamentally built off of. So it's definitely a good read. It's a pretty quick read too. It's not like, I probably read it in a few days maybe, and that was taking my time with it.
Wow. I'll add that to my list. I've never heard of it. You reminded me of a really simple book by Thich Nhat Hanh called Peace in Every Step. And when I first read that, it's also a really small book. That was my first introduction to celebrating the small, beautiful moments of life. And it has changed the way I wash dishes, because now when I wash dishes, I try to get myself to that place where I'm fully immersed in it as if it's an art, as if it's the last time I will wash these dishes. And I've been noticing just the beautiful prisms and rainbows and the bubbles of the soap. And there is something nice about just the reminder that we can be in this mindset throughout the entire day if we get really good at it. But really in the moment-to-moment tasks, we can kind of build it right on in, and then there's this sense of magic or richness in what we do. So yeah, I think it's just finding the book or the text or the person, the teacher, whoever, that communicates it in a way that really resonates and lands well, and kind of just getting interested in that and seeing how you can apply it to your day to day.
Definitely. What would you say was, I lost the question that I was going to have. I feel like it was a good question too, so I'm kind of disappointed that I lost it in there.
Let's see if we can extract it. I always like a good question.
What would you say are different tools that you've used as far as like maybe supplements or spaces that you've been in, things like that, that have been beneficial?
To get into more of a peaceful, present state. Mm-hmm. So I've noticed a huge difference with tea, and I think it's mostly the L-theanine, but then thinking about the other polyphenols and flavonoids and just the different aspects of tea, I've been having a lot of tea recently. Start most of my days with tea and honey and salt, and start the day off slowly, and I notice it just puts me in such a appreciative and grateful mindset. And then of course, where I'm surrounded right now in Colorado, taking the time to appreciate what's around me, whether it's a deer walking, outside our window, or watching the morning birds, listening to the morning birds. I've been doing that, opening the window, sitting, drinking my tea, writing, kind of that stream of consciousness type of state. And honestly too, based off of Pete's principle, is really paying attention to what might be irritating me in my gut, and choosing the least harmful and most easily digestible, soothing foods possible. And I kind of feed myself like a baby these days. Like I really choose like the mushy, easily digestible foods, like really cooking down my zucchini. I love like really tender meats. I've been on a huge egg custard kick and choosing just like really delicious ripe fruits. And that has made a huge difference because I was one of those people that fell into the mindset of, you know, huge kale salads and nuts and seeds and flax crackers and, you know, spent a lot of my younger days eating really irritating foods. And it was definitely impacting the way my brain worked, especially the worse my gut became. But back to supplements that have made a difference. Sweet milky coffee, again, super simple, but that's another one of those tools. I tend to have more in the afternoon now, but I just notice I get excited to work and create and have calls and, you know, just work on content when I'm in that good flow state. And it feels like another moment to be that almost feels like kind of magical and rich, and I'll lose sense of time, lose track of time. And I know those are my favorite moments where, you know, before I know it, it's like 5:30, 6 o'clock, and I've just been getting lost in things. I've been switching from the raw carrots to more cooked mushrooms, and that seems to be making a difference too. And I think I just like the flavor better. I know you've said a couple of times that you can eat the same thing every single day. I feel that way to a certain extent. I can maybe eat the same types of foods for a period of time, and then my body says, no, we need something new. So I kind of have to do an overhaul. And really well-cooked shiitake mushrooms and getting a little crispy on the edges has been amazing. And I do notice that when my bowels are in better condition, the world is more beautiful. And then let me think about nighttime. Oh, tulsi tea, sweet tulsi tea with glycine at night seems to be making a huge difference. And I've been playing around with having a little bit of aspirin at night as well. And I notice I just sleep more deeply. I feel better the next day because I've slept better. So I think those are some of the simplest hacks. That word always throws me off, but the simplest hacks that I've been playing around with recently. What about you?
Is that also known as holy basil, the tulsi?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Sounds good. I would say the most significant thing as far as food goes is just eating frequently throughout the day. Mm-hmm. I notice most often whenever I get into a situation where I'm just pissed for no reason, or I'm very easily frustrated or anxious, it's most likely because I haven't eaten in a few hours. Yeah. Or the food that I did eat wasn't balanced properly and my blood sugar is taking a dip. And so I'll see myself tending to become more frustrated whenever my blood sugar is low a lot more easily. So I guess my fuse is shortened with the amount of blood sugar that I have in my bloodstream, so to speak.
For some reason, I can't imagine you irritable, but thank you for being honest. And as you were speaking, you reminded me too of what we touched on before the call, but salt, upping salt significantly throughout the day. I basically take a couple tablespoons of white sea salt, pour boiling water over it, and make a brine basically. And then I add scoops of that to my liquids, my teas, my coffee, my juice. And I notice I'm less concerned or even worried about hitting certain nutritional targets because I feel so much better throughout the day. So for a while I was tracking a little bit just to see, okay, where's my calcium at? Where's my potassium at? What's going on here? How much magnesium am I getting? But with the increase of salt intake, it's almost like my body feels like it's naturally finding a way to balance out, and I'll crave certain foods and it just feels like it plugs right in and I'm good to go. So that's been exciting because I don't think nutrition personally, I don't really enjoy the tracking lifestyle. It feels like it's almost robbing from other areas of my life when I even have to pause to, okay, how much did I eat? Versus, okay, trusting that the body's going to tell me. And like you said, eating regularly, noticing if I'm getting any cue that I may have need some more fuel, and really jumping on that, honoring that. And it's like back to that childlike state where I'm ready to play, ready to go again. So outdoor activities and getting, you know, really excited about doing more hikes and getting to more peaks. If I have a backpack of snacks and some salty water, I am good to go. It's like adventures just open up from there. So yeah, not understating the small things like blood sugar balance. It's like we can forget the supplements for a second and just think about, okay, are you fueling and keeping that blood sugar rumbling smoothly? Great. You probably won't need to really think about all the supplements unless you want to start getting fancy.
Definitely. I would also say camping is something that has also been beneficial, or just like getting out into a space where there is less people and less EMFs. I think that's, I was having a conversation with a couple of my friends while I was camping the other weekend, and they mentioned that they always feel great whenever they get back from camping. Yeah. And I honestly believe it's due to less EMF exposure because we live so close to a city. And it makes perfect sense. Like your body's just kind of freed from a significant stressor, so to speak. So I would say just getting out into nature and kind of figuring out how you can connect to the earth and to yourself is very beneficial.
Yeah, the novelty too, getting out of your rhythm or your habits. And I recently went on a camping trip and didn't have cell service, just had firelight at night, and you know, walked around barefoot, you know, peeing out in the woods. It felt so good to just simplify. And yeah, it's like all these factors, the EMF is lower, we're not being exposed to the crazy amounts of light that we shouldn't be past bedtime. Even the food tastes better, so there's greater appreciation. We're likely moving our bodies in more unique ways. We're getting creative with the way we're cooking and what we're cooking. I couldn't agree more. It's like the simplest thing to just get out, get away. And I know it's kind of like a cliche these days to like take a Instagram break, but really take an Instagram break, take a computer break, go play and, you know, savor for a bit.
Definitely. I would say, I'm glad you mentioned that novelty. That is another one that has been extremely beneficial for me, especially working from home. So I'll find myself frequently Googling new coffee shops to go to, and I'll just go explore a new coffee shop that's around me, or maybe a new bookstore that I really want to go to, or a different park that's somewhere around me. Or let's see. I would say those are probably about the extent of the things that I go to. Every once in a while, I'll try and find like a new cool, like dive bar or something like that I can go to and kind of like show to my friends and stuff. I think that's kind of cool. Or like one that's easy to ride my motorcycle to. Mm-hmm. But finding new places to explore and interrupting the routines that you set up for yourself on a daily basis, because whether you think you have a routine or you don't, you most likely do in some form or fashion. I've caught myself thinking that I don't have a routine at all, and I'll pay attention for a couple of days and I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of doing the same thing. I need to switch it up a little bit.
Yeah. And I feel like in the novelty too, not only is it exciting and rewarding, but it gives us another opportunity to learn and then maybe shift and then reincorporate. Because back to that sleepwalking idea, like if we get in a rhythm and we have our habits and we go to the gym at a certain time and we do a specific exercise, we come home and have the same dinner, that can feel like it's kind of moving in the contracted direction versus, okay, what's the smallest thing we could possibly change? I've been practicing even cutting my potatoes differently, or seeing, okay, I've been eating this for a while. Maybe it's time to try something new. And it's, yeah, it's almost like you get to experience a different version of you just by changing the smallest thing. It's, and I want everyone to almost remember to like seize the ability to do so, because if we are holding ourselves in these patterns and maybe blindly falling back into them, we can just as easily step into something different and experience that joy, you know, even just by taking a new walk, or, you know, it could be so simple. It doesn't have to be going on a fancy vacation or anything like that. It could literally be, you know, trying a different type of zucchini and cutting it the short way instead of the long way.
So one of the things that I am inspired to do more frequently, actually my boss and friend Chris, he does it often. I think he did it more often toward whenever it was kind of like the pandemic era and you couldn't really get out anywhere. It's like a staycation. So he'll just rent a hotel room for a night or something, and just to interrupt his pattern. Like if he finds himself getting stale on like the creative level or something like that, he'll rent a hotel room, he'll go, or he'll get an Airbnb somewhere, and he'll just sit by the pool, get some sun, relax a little bit, sleep in a different bed, in a different room, a different building, different area of town. And all of that creates the novel stimulation for that too.
Yeah. Now I'm curious, since you've been getting more into jujitsu, have you learned anything new about yourself, or even stepped into a new pattern that feels like it's expanded your enjoyment of life?
Yeah. So I would say, first of all, I'm someone who likes to go extreme with something whenever I'm initially introduced to it, so I can see where my boundaries lie and then work backwards from there. So I had to test that out initially, which is something that I haven't had to do on the physical level for quite a while. So I was going 7 days a week for a little while, realized that was a little too much. So I backed it down to about 5, still a little too much. And now I'll go to anywhere from 6 to 12 classes a week, but it's usually like, you know, some light classes, then some harder rolling. And it's usually only 4 days out of the week, something like that. So I have plenty of time to rest. I would also say one of the things that I was surprised by, but was my ego was a lot more in check than I had expected it to be, which was, it was a nice surprise, but it was definitely interesting to observe, because I expected myself to have a little bit more grit, I guess, as far as tapping out quickly so you don't get hurt, and then very easily accepting the advice of others. So that was a kind of a nice surprise to be introduced to, for sure.
Wow, thanks for sharing. That's awesome. I'm glad you were able to find what works. I'm with you. I get really excited about something and get maybe, you know, push myself a little bit past and then scale back. So I've had many experiences this year where choosing the gentle path feels like it always works best for me, even if my brain wants to go a little intensely at first.
Definitely. Well, Teresa, I want to be respectful of your time. Where can people find you on social media, website, all of that good stuff?
Yeah, still at Living Roots Wellness, mostly posting on Instagram, and very excited, just launched Tapping with Tea. Forgot about resources. It's funny what we what our blind spots are, but Tapping with Tea, it's a full library of tapping sequences based on different symptoms, themes. So whether it's sleep, whether it's body image, whether it's fear, grief, pain, addiction. You can tap along to different sequences, and it's also a community. So that's been exciting. Less active at livingrichwellness.com, but still update that every once in a while. But most excited about tapping with tea, just because it feels like my first and maybe only baby. Well, no, well, there's going to be more babies in the realm of creation, not the human form, but yeah, super excited about that. So thank you for asking and reminding me.
Definitely. For those of you listening, make sure to, at the very least, check out her Instagram, because I know I enjoy watching all the stories that you post and your regular posts. They're fantastic. So make sure to check her out, and we'll talk to y'all next time. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to hit the like button, subscribe, and leave a comment down below if you want us to cover a different topic.